This is the Capricorn FM podcast.
This grade 12 lesson is proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more providing quality education.
Good evening, my lovely learners. We are meeting again. I'm Mr. Majesar, attached to Texila Secondary School. Before maybe we continue with today's topic, I want to give you these three catchphrases. The first one, because you wrote your trial examination, and then you have already seen your performance. So some might have performed very well, and then some might have not performed well. So the most important thing that I want to bring forth here is to encourage you, because a self-motivated person develops a zeal and a will to do something. And then remember, where there's a will, there's always a way. I've got three catchphrases that I want to get you with. Number one, those who did not perform well, you need to know that you are champions, because they normally say champions do fall, but they refuse the falling action to keep them down. So it does not matter how many times you fall. What matters is, after falling, what do you do? You need to wake up and move on. And then, because you cannot climb a ladder of success dressed in a costume of failure. You need to make sure that when you climb a ladder of success, you dress accordingly. You cannot dress a costume of failure. In other words, you cannot claim to want to get good results, but you realize that you are not doing anything. You need to work very, very hard. But those who perform very well, we wish you good luck. But you need to know that number one enemy of continuous improvement is arrival syndrome. Never say I have arrived, because success is not a destination, but a journey. There's always room for improvement. So you need to revise thoroughly. But on the same breath now, I also want to guide you to say you need to use exam guideline. I was telling my learners today to say, time and again, you need to use exam guideline frequently, because number one, it gives you, if you check the 2021 exam guideline, page 6, it indicates the topics. Let me say, because the topic that I'm going to discuss today is based on paper 1. It indicates that reproduction in vertebrates is 8 marks. But human reproduction that I'm going to discuss right now is 41 marks. And then responding to environment in humans, that is EAI and nervous system, is 54 marks. 54. So in other words, if a learner just tell himself, those who want to get level 3, a learner just say, I want to get level 3, but I'm level 2. In fact, I revise EAI and nervous system. Then because level 2 is 45, obviously, we are going to get almost everything. But now, because we want you to strive to get total, because it's possible, it's doable. And then if you check endocrine system and homeostasis, 34 marks. Just these three chapters, that is human reproduction, 41 marks. EAI and nervous system, 54. Endocrine system and homeostasis, 34. If you add this, already you've got 129. Before we even check the other chapters now. The most important thing that I want to bring forth again here is that you cannot spend 2 weeks studying reproduction in vertebrates, whereas it's only 8 marks. You need to balance your things. Now, as much as I told you that we're going to do revision based on reproduction, but I'm not just teaching per se, I'm guiding you on how to use exam guideline versus the topic that we're going to discuss today. It is on page 10 from exam guideline. It says, introduction, learners should revise the schematic outline of the human life cycle to show the role of meiosis, mitosis, and fertilization. Number two, structure of the main reproductive system. In this case, they said learners should know the structure of the male reproductive system using the diagram. In other words, it's very vital for you to make sure that when you revise this part, you don't just have this name to say this penis, prostate gland, corpus gland. No, you need to know the structures from the diagram. Why? Because it's very vital for you to know this. Because each examiner, let me say, you know the function of prostate gland. An examiner says, name the function of the part number 4. And you don't know what is part number 4, then it's just a futile exercise. So make sure that you know all the stretchers and also the labels. On the same breath, again, you are also supposed to know the structure of the female reproductive system. And then maybe with regard to the male, the states learners should know the following: the functions of testes, epididymis, vas deferens. Remember, vas deferens is also sperm duct. And then seminal vesicle, prostate gland, corpus gland, penis, and urethra. So when you study basing your argument on this, when you revise this, you end up saying, okay, let me check the structure, the function of testes. Maybe to a certain extent, you realize that you have forgotten about the function of the testes. Then you refer, and so on and so on. Very, very simple. Now, let me maybe also give you an example of gametogenesis or spermatogenesis. In fact, we've got gametogenesis that is divided into spermatogenesis and oogenesis. There are many learners, you realize that they study, I cannot mention the name of books, but you realize that they studied a lot of information based on the oogenesis. And when you check, you realize that these answers are very relevant. And also spermatogenesis. They are relevant, but they end up getting one. Why? Because they shall have supplied us with a lot of information. You spend a lot of time trying to revise a lot of books, and then whereas you have an exam guideline that guides you on how to deal with this. Because here, if you check from exam guideline, let me just give you an example here about spermatogenesis. They say, under the influence of testosterone, because sometimes this can be a composite mark, and then diploid cell in the seminiferous tubules of the testes. Remember, the testes, inside the testes, we have got what we call the seminiferous tubule. So now the diploid cells in the seminiferous tubules, you are going to get a mark for that. Of the testes, sometimes you can also get a mark for testes. Undergo meiosis, and then it's also a mark for meiosis. To form haploid sperm cells, then you are done. Very simple. But you realize that somebody is going to talk about primary spermatocyte and whatever, a lot of information. When we mark during finalism, you will put zero because you are irrelevant. You need to study according to the exam guideline and answer questions accordingly. And what is interesting again about the exam guideline is that it also, in some instances, it has the some notes. And then normally when they compile memoranda are compiled according to this exam guideline. It's very vital for you to make sure that you use the exam guideline. But on that note, let me start with the male reproductive system. As much as I told you that you must know the structure, the diagram first, and then from there you must be able to identify, to mention the names based on the diagram. We are going to start with the testes. And then remember, the main function of the test is to produce two things. That is the sperm cells, number one. Number two, the hormone testosterone. Sperm cells and the hormone testosterone. And then number two, we also have what we call the epididymis. And then the epididymis stores sperm cells temporarily. Remember, the epididymis is the highly coiled tubule. Immediately after sperm cells have been produced by the testes, now they are going to be stored in the epididymis, the highly coiled tubule outside the testes, which is called the epididymis. It was said during trial examination, many learners wrote scrotum because the way it was designed, it was like a scrotum. And then immediately examiner says, explain the function of this part. You end up giving a wrong answer. So we cannot drop the ball. Please make sure that you revise this thoroughly. And then the other one is sperm duct, self-explanatory. That is the duct that transports sperm. Although in some books they talk of the vas deferens, you need to know that the sperm duct is also regarded as the vas deferens. Then again, we also have three glands that are regarded, I normally abbreviate them as SPC, S for seminal vesicle, and then P for prostate gland, and then C for the corpus gland. So now, the seminal vesicle, because that is the first one, it provides nutrients to sperm cell. It provides sperm cell with nutrients. It's like the sperm cell are having breakfast. From there, they need to move. But along the way, there is a problem. there is an acid. So, fortunate enough, we've got the prostate gland, as I said, SPC, seminal vesicle. Number two, the prostate gland. Now, this prostate gland releases the alkaline fluid. Remember, when alkaline combines with acid, they form neutral. That's why we say prostate gland secretes the alkaline fluid, which neutralizes the acid. Then the last one is the corpus gland, which secretes mucus-like substances that facilitate the movement of sperm. Corpus gland secretes the mucus-like substance that facilitates the movement of sperm. Now, we also have the ejaculatory duct. This one, they force the contents of the sperm through the urethra. They force the contents of the sperm through the urethra. But we also have the urethra. Then this one is the common tube for the passage of both urine and also semen. And then the last one is the penis, which transfers the sperm into the female reproductive organ or the vagina. Now, you need to also know the function of testosterone, because I told you that testosterone is the hormone that is going to be released by the testis. Now, with testosterone, if you compare yourself with a learner who is in grade 1, I'm talking about males now, you realize that you are two different. Why? Because, number one, there are a lot of features that have developed. But when you are born, obviously there are the primary sexual characteristics. Like, for argument's sake, you have the penis, then which is the primary sexual characteristic. But when you talk about the secondary sexual characteristics, is where we are going to talk about development of BS, enlargement of waste box, and then production of sperm cell, and then there are a lot of things that you can check. But now, not long we'll be going for break, but and then also when we come back from break, we'll be discussing the female reproductive organ. Then thereafter, we're also going to check the structure suitability of the sperm and also the structure of the ovum. Let us go for break and then we'll continue shortly. Welcome back, my lovely learners. Remember, I said we are going to continue with the female reproductive organ or system. But now, before that, let me guide you about the structural suitability of the sperm for fertilization. Structural suitability of the sperm for fertilization. Number one, you need to know, because when you say structural suitability, obviously structure from the word structure, we are going to check the structure of the sperm, or how is it suitable, or when you check the structure of the sperm, how does it become good for the sperm cell to be able to perform its function of fertilization. So you need to know the structure of the sperm cell. At number one, you must know that it has got the mitochondria. And then always remember, when you talk about mitochondria, you think of energy. So it has got mitochondria that release energy for swimming. Then it also has the long tail. The long tail moves like a whip, in a whip-like action, producing the swimming movement. In other words, propelling the sperm cell forward. Then we also have the acrosome. Remember, the acrosome is found on the at the tip of the head of the sperm. Now, that acrosome releases enzymes. Those enzymes are the ones that are going to digest the membrane of the egg. Or in some books, they say they dissolve the membrane of the egg. But there are learners who make some mistakes here. They say the acrosome digests the membrane of the egg, which is not correct. The acrosome releases the enzymes. Those enzymes are the ones that are going to digest the membrane of the egg. Then we also have the sperm cell also has the head, which contains the nucleus. Remember, the nucleus contains haploid number of chromosomes. In other words, it also contains genetic material. Then when you say haploid, meaning that if it's a male, we are talking about human. Remember, a normal cell of a human, that is the somatic cell, has got 46 chromosomes. Now, when you talk about the gametes, they must have 23 or half. Why half? Because they fertilize each other. Because if it's 46 plus 46, obviously the zygote is going to have 92, and that is called abnormal meiosis. Although it happens in plants, it falls under what we call polyploidy. Poly meaning many, ploidy meaning set, or many sets. But now, the main reason why the stem cell undergo meiosis to make sure that it halves the number of chromosomes to 23 and also halves the number of chromosomes on the female, so that ultimately the sperm cell, when it fertilizes the egg, we end up having the zygote containing 46 chromosomes. But we'll discuss a lot of them thereafter. But now, my focus is on the structural stability of the sperm. Now, the other point is, although when I check, these are the simple structural stability that you can bring forth. But the other one, it has the contents of the sperm cells, such as the cytoplasm, is reduced or condensed. And then this helps the sperm cell to be light, and then as a result, it facilitates the efficient movement. So don't be tempted to write this one if you are not sure about, because normally they want three. And then three, the simplest one is mitochondria, then you explain. Long tail, you explain. Acrosome, you explain, and also has the head, which contains nucleus, then you also explain. Very simple. Or sometimes the examiner is going to request you to draw the structure of the stem cell. Then normally, many learners commit mistakes here because I'm dealing with content and also the mistakes that normally learners commit, so that we alleviate those kinds of problems. If examiner says draw a label structure of the stem cell and then 5 marks, it does not mean in the past you were supposed to draw the structure and then you give 5 labels, then you end up getting 5. But now, according to your syllabus, when they say structure of the sperm cell and 5 marks, number one, you realize that labels are going to be allocated to only 3 marks. The other mark is for the shape of the sperm cell. The other mark is for the caption. So many learners will realize that they draw the whole structure of the sperm cell. They don't even, number one, maybe you realize that the structure of that sperm cell is like the tennis racket. The shape, you realize that the head is very big and then and a very small tail, like a tennis racket. So you are not going to get a mark there, because number one, we check the structure of the sperm cell. You must keep on practicing these drawings up until you know that at least you are able to draw a diagram that is more or less the same as the one that is reflected in your different textbooks. Then the second one, learners make a mistake of not writing the caption. You realize that a learner has drawn a nice structure of the sperm cell and provided maybe 7 labels. But you end up, if it is out of 4, you end up getting, out of 5, you end up getting 4. Whereas you have provided 7 labels, because you shall have missed the caption. Now, this about the sperm cell. Now, with regard to the female reproductive organs, number one, you also know, as much as we talked about testes to say it releases sperm cells and also hormones. Remember the hormone I said, testosterone. Now, in this case now, the ovary also produces egg cells and 2 hormones. These 2 hormones are oestrogen and progesterone. Oestrogen and progesterone. If you check these 2 hormones, the one that starts with P, that is progesterone. And then this P, you may write the formula, P is equals to P, then progesterone for pregnancy. In other words, progesterone maintains pregnancy. Although these 2, they have got the common function, like the thickening of the endometrium. Both of them thicken the endometrium. But on the other hand, again, with regard to the oestrogen, as much as we talked about the testosterone to say it is responsible for the development of secondary sexual characteristics in males, such as pubic hairs, a large voice box, and then depending on voice, ultimately males develop muscles, and then and so on and so on. So these are the things that are caused by the testosterone. But with regard to the females, the oestrogen is the one that plays a major role here. In other words, the oestrogen also, it is responsible for the development of secondary sexual characteristics in females. Like, for argument's sake, development of pubic hairs, development of breasts, widening of hips, and then maybe the other one that I talked about is thickening of the endometrium. But the most important thing, you need to know, why are you different from a learner who is in grade R? Just know that it is because of oestrogen. You don't have to cry. And so I was telling my students to say, happy grade 12 learn MA license is very, very simple, because it deals with you as a human being. Just to conscientize you about why females are menstruating, why sometimes they have the period pains, why males produce sperm cells at a certain stage, and so on. It's very simple and straightforward. Now, the other thing that we need to take into cognizance is about the fallopian tube. In some book, they talk of oviduct. So this one is the site for fertilization. It is the site for fertilization. It also transports eggs from the ovary. But the other part that you are supposed to know is about the endometrium. Remember the endometrium, endo meaning inside, and the metrium meaning the layer. In the past, you were supposed to know three types of membranes. It was the perimetrium, peri meaning outside. Then the second one was the myometrium, myo meaning middle. Then the inner one was called endometrium, endo meaning inside, meaning that the outer membrane, the middle membrane, and the inner membrane. But now, you don't have to know all those types. As I said, it's very vital for you to make sure that you study according to exam guideline, because if you don't study according to exam guideline and you tell yourself that, let me use different books so that I have a lot of information, you are going to have a lot of information that is not relevant. Then it's just a futile exercise. You are wasting your time and energy. Channel your energy directly. So in other words here, we're dealing with only endometrium. The issue of myometrium and perimetrium no longer in the syllabus. And then, now what is the function of endometrium? It serves as the place of the implantation of the embryo. It serves as the place of the implantation of the embryo. In other words, the embryo attaches on the endometrium. Then we also have the uterus, which carries the embryo and fetus during pregnancy. The uterus carries the embryo and fetus during pregnancy. But you also have the cervix. Then the cervix normally it stretches to allow the baby through during childbirth, which is very vital. And then the last one is the vagina that receives the semen and the penis and semen during sexual intercourse. The vagina receives penis and semen during sexual intercourse. And when you check from your exam guideline, it also says learners should also know the structure of the ovum. Learners should know the structure of the ovum. And then if you did not revise this or you did not study according to exam guideline, it is easy for you to forget about this. As long as you have known a lot of things based on the female reproductive organ and the male reproductive organ, you end up forgetting about the structure of the ovum. I still remember 2016, there was one learner who said, say, paper one, I got 149. I missed only one mark for just to label the structure. They gave them the structure of the ovum. Then they indicated the nucleus. They also indicated the cytoplasm. Then he missed the jelly-like layer. Can you see how simple is it? But the fact that you shall have not studied according to the exam guideline, you lose marks unnecessarily. So now, in this, with regard to the structure of the ovum, you can draw, maybe I can also guide you on how to draw this. Just draw three circles. The first one, the inner one, then the second one, embracing the, or enclosing the small one. Then the small one, you are going to write the nucleus. Then the second one, in other words, between the second line and the third, or the small round and the second small round or circle, so between the two, you are going to indicate the cytoplasm. But the last layer, you can just draw it, and then from there, you label it and you write jelly-like layer. Jelly-like layer. But sometimes, as much as we talked about the structural stability of the sperm cell for its function of fertilization, sometimes examiner may end up saying, what are the structural stability of the ovum? Number one, you are going to say it has the nucleus. You get a mark for that. And then this nucleus carries genetic material. You get another mark. Very simple. And remember, you can also say, if you don't want to talk about carrying the genetic material, you can also say it has the haploid number of chromosomes. As much as we said it when we're busy with the sperm cell, to say the nucleus has the haploid number of chromosomes. You can also apply it like this. Now, number two, you can also say it has the cytoplasm that provides a reserve source of nutrients for the fertilized ovum. It has the cytoplasm, you get a mark for that, that provides a reserve source of nutrients for the fertilized ova. Very simple. Now, the other thing that you need to remember, I've already told you about the changes that happened in females, like development of breasts, widening of hips, growth of vaginas, start of menstrual cycle, development of the pubic hairs in males. I talked about enlargement of the voice box and the deepening of the voice, the penis and testes increase in size, the start of production of the stem cell, development of pubic hairs and also facial hairs. But in some instances, we can also talk about the muscles or the shoulder and chest get broader. In other words, the muscles also develop. Now, the other part that we need to talk about is the one that I've been talking about, to say learners should know something about the gametogenesis. Gametogenesis. Then this gametogenesis, remember, it's a compound word made up of gameto and genesis. Genesis from the Bible, the first book of the Bible is called Genesis, meaning that the foundation or maybe the formation. Now here, when you talk about the gametogenesis, gameto meaning, if we check this prefix, gameto, then meaning obviously we're going to talk about gametes. And remember, we've got only two gametes, the male gamete and the female gamete. Now, the male gamete is called stem cells. The female gametes are egg cells. Now, if examiner says, what is gametogenesis? This is the process whereby the gametes are formed from the germinal epithelium or germinal epithelial cells. The process whereby the gametes are formed from the germinal epithelial cells, then you get a mark for that. Or sometimes the examiner may end up saying, what is the, or define spermatogenesis. I have not yet started to explain the process of spermatogenesis, I'm just defining. There's a difference between defining and explanation. Then with regard to spermatogenesis as a definition, you are going to say it is a formation of the sperm cell from the germinal epithelium of the testes. You don't even have to claim, because spermatogenesis also is a compound word made up of spermato from the word sperm cell and also genesis meaning the formation. So you think of the formation of sperm cells, you get a mark for that from the germinal epithelial cells of the testes. Now, or genesis, that is the formation of egg cells from the germinal epithelial or epithelial cells of the ovary. The formation of egg cells from the germinal epithelium of the ovary. Now, I was defining those. And then from here, as much as I keep on saying there are different questions, and but same answers. Now, examiner may end up asking questions based on this. Let me say, examiner says, under biological concepts, he says the formation of sperm cells from the germinal epithelium. Then you underline the key concept, the opening and the closing statement. Immediately they say the formation, you underline formation. Then when they say of sperm cells, then you underline sperm cells. Then you know that, okay, this one is spermatogenesis. Or if examiner says the formation of egg cells from the germinal epithelium, then you underline formation, you also underline the egg cells. Then you know that that is oogenesis. But sometimes examiners are very tricky. He may end up saying the formation, remember when he says the formation of gametes, you know that that's gametogenesis. But the examiner may end up saying the formation of egg cells and sperm cells. Then you become frustrated, because when they say formation of sperm cells, you know that that's spermatogenesis. Formation of egg cells, you know that that's oogenesis. But if examiner says the formation of egg cells and sperm cells, then you end up being frustrated. Some learners end up writing one. And if you write spermatogenesis, it's not correct. What about the oogenesis? And if you write oogenesis, not correct. What about the spermatogenesis? So now it needs you to apply your mind to say, okay, the formation of egg cells and sperm cells. Remember, egg cells are female gametes, and then sperm cells are male gametes, meaning that we're talking about gametes. Then you know that the answer is gametogenesis. But how do we explain the processes now? You explain them according to the exam guideline. The first one I already explained based on spermatogenesis, but let me repeat, maybe to add a little bit of information. Spermatogenesis is the formation of sperm cells, but here you are no longer going to define this one. You are just going to say it takes place under the influence of testosterone. This is very vital. You must tell us the hormone. And then from there, germinal epithelial cell underlying seminiferous tubules in the testis undergo meiosis to form four haploid spermatids. Germinal epithelial cells underlying seminiferous tubule in the testis undergo meiosis to form four haploid spermatids. Each spermatid develops into a mature sperm cell in the epididymis. Now, with regard to oogenesis, here you are going to say it takes place under the influence of FSH. Then the diploid cell in the ovary undergoes mitosis to form numerous follicles. One cell inside the follicle enlarges and undergoes meiosis to form a mature ovum. Just that. So let me repeat it. You are going to say oogenesis, that is, it takes place under the influence of FSH. It's very vital for you to mention the hormone that influences this. As much as I said under spermatogenesis, to say it takes place under the influence of testosterone, because sometimes you realize that these are the compulsory marks, because they told us to say it's a must that you must tell us the hormone that influence spermatogenesis and also the hormone that influence oogenesis. And then now, not long we'll be going for a short break. Then when we come back from short break, we'll be explaining fertilization and development of zygote until implantation. We're also going to discuss the function of the umbilical cord. Thank you. Okay, welcome back, my lovely learners. Before break, I said we are going to explain what we call the fertilization and development of zygote until implantation. Fertilization and development of zygote until implantation. So I'm going to fragment this into two. I'll start with fertilization first. Many learners, when they say explain fertilization, these are the mistakes that they normally commit, because now I'm dealing with the mistakes that learners commit and how to alleviate those challenges. They start to explain copulation. They say during sexual intercourse, this is what happens, and then from there, the sperm cell is going to swim, and then the tail is going to assist the sperm cell to swim, and also the mitochondria are going to supply energy. They give us a lot of stories, and then from there, they say now the sperm cell fertilizes the egg. You are going to get one mark, and then where this end is where they are supposed to start now. So now with fertilization, you don't have to tell us a lot of stories. Number one, you must tell us the place where fertilization takes place. Number one, you tell us that it takes place in the fallopian tube, then you get a mark for that. Then from there, you tell us about the sperm cell fertilizing the egg. One sperm cell makes contact with the membrane of the egg, you get a mark for that. Let me repeat, one sperm cell makes contact with the membrane of the egg or the ovum. Then the acrosome releases enzyme. Remember, I said those enzymes are going to digest or dissolve the membrane of the egg. Now, the nucleus of the sperm enters the ovum now. Why? Because the membrane of the egg shall have been dissolved now. Then this gives the nucleus of the sperm cell an opportunity to get into the or to penetrate the membrane of the egg. And then what is interesting here is that the membrane of the ovum becomes impenetrable to other sperm cells. Then you get a mark again for that. The membrane of the ovum becomes impenetrable to other sperms. Now, the haploid nucleus of the sperm fuses with the haploid nucleus of the ovum. Very, very important. You must tell us, you must show us that you know your story, to say the nucleus there is haploid. I'm talking about the nucleus of the sperm cell. Fuses with the haploid nucleus of the ovum, because in some instance you are going to get a mark for that. That is a mark for haploid nucleus of the sperm, and then fusing with the haploid nucleus of the ovum, another mark, to form a zygote. But this zygote, you must tell us that is a diploid zygote. As simple as that. Then you're also going to get a mark for that. Then you are done with fertilization. Not those lot of stories to say the sperm cell is going to swim or during sexual intercourse or during copulation, this is what's going to happen. No, we want fertilization. You must tell us exactly where fertilization takes place from there. You must tell us about the sperm cell fertilizing the egg and almost everything that I've just outlined here. Now, with the development of zygote, I told you in the past, because now we're also doing revision, because it's revision. Development of zygote until implantation, I said you use this formula, Z is equal to Mbefui, and then Z for zygote, just write zygote, and then M for Murula, and then B for blastocyst or blastula. And you can attest to this. There are a lot of cases, time and again, or time without numbers, they keep on setting the development of zygote until implantation. Sometimes they bring it in the form of diagrams. I'm going to guide you on how to deal with this. And then, let me repeat. I said Z is for zygote, and then M is for morula, and then B is for the blastocyst, although some books they talk of the blastula. Then the E is for the embryo. Then let me skip F. Then we're going to have uterus. That U is for uterus. And then I is for implantation. But remember, on the uterus, you don't just talk about the uterus. You need to tell us about the endometrium of the uterus, where the embryo, or some books they talk of the embryo implanting itself on the uterus. Some books they talk of the blastocyst or blastula attaching to the endometrium of the uterus. Now, that F is for fallopian tube. In other words, the whole process, when the zygote develops into morula and whatever, and morula into blastocyst, the process will be moving from the fallopian tube into the uterus. Hence, I said that U is for uterus, into the uterus where it's going to be implanted. Now, remember, please let me highlight this again. Don't forget that when you talk about the uterus, specifically you need to talk about the endometrium, because if you just say the uterus, I mean the young one becomes implanted in the uterus, we give you zero, because you must tell us that it attaches to, it attaches the membrane of the endometrium of the uterus. Now, but now the other marks that we need to know is as follows. Number one, you're going to say the zygote divides by mitosis. Immediately you say it divides by mitosis, you get a mark to form a ball of cells called morula. Now, from here, let me guide you about this. If maybe examiner is going to draw these diagrams, you realize that he has drawn diagrams, you can also be able to identify, or let me finish this first, and then from there I'm going to show you how normal questions are set in the form of diagrams. How are we going to identify that this is the blastula, then this is the morula, and so on and so on. Now, the second one, or let me repeat, start with the first one. I said the zygote divides by mitosis. You get a mark for mitosis. To form a ball of cells, immediately say ball of cells, you get a mark. Called morula, you also get a mark for morula. Then morula develops into a hollow ball of cells. Then you underline hollow ball of cells, called the blastula, and the or the blastocyst. Then the blastocyst develops into the embryo. And then, like I said, in some books they talk of the embryo embedding itself into the uterus using the chorionic villi. Or sometimes you realize that they talk about blastocyst embedding itself on the uterus or the endometrium of the uterus. But now, if examiner is going to set this in the form of diagrams, to a certain extent you realize that they give you diagrams, and then you realize that these diagrams are haphazardly arranged, then maybe examiner is going to request you to arrange them accordingly. Then what do you do in this case? As much as you said, somewhere you talked about ball of cells, and then we said ball of cells called morula. If you want to identify between the two diagrams, you realize that the other diagram has got ball of cells, but the other one has got hollow ball of cells. You realize that we've got ball of cells, but they form a hollow-like structure. Then you know that, okay, this one, a hollow ball of cells is called the blastula, but this one just a ball of cells, then you think of the morula. Now, obviously, when they say arrange them accordingly, you go back to our formula Z is question before you know that the zygote, because to a certain extent you may realize that they also indicate the sperm cell fertilizing the egg. And then from there they show you the small diagram there. Then you must know that this is the zygote. Then you are going to arrange them accordingly. Now, but again, you must also know the functions of, or let me check something based on the functions of the umbilical cord. With the umbilical cord, number one, I want you to write the following. Just write 1, 2, and 3. Then 1, write mother. And then you skip 2 lines. You write placenta. You write true, then you write placenta. You skip 2 lines again. Then you write three, you write the fetus. That is the mother, number two, placenta, number three, the fetus. If examiner, let me start with the function of umbilical cord. Maybe between placenta and the fetus, draw two parallel lines joining the placenta and the fetus. They should be extreme. Then, but inside those two parallel lines, draw an arrow moving to the placenta. And then placenta is like university. Then that arrow moving the placenta, immediately right the artery. Because normally I was telling my students to say, during our time, when you get 80 to 100, during our time, we used to call it a symbol, but now you call it level 7. So now, that's why I said placenta is like university. Then the arrow that moves into the placenta, you write A, then it's like you pass with A, and or the A symbol. Then that is the artery. Then the other one should move from the placenta to the fetus. That will be the vein. Then we talk of the umbilical artery and then also the umbilical vein. Now, if examiner says, what are the functions of the umbilical cord? Very simple. Number one, it is found between placenta and fetus. Then we are going to say it attaches the fetus to the placenta. One mark. It attaches the fetus to the placenta. Number two, you are going to say... You tell us about the fetus. We check us whether maybe the fetus should receive the waste products and should also receive the deoxygenated blood. And obviously it's not supposed to be like that. The fetus should receive nutrients and the fetus should also receive oxygen. Now, the blood containing oxygen, remember, is called oxygenated blood. So you are going to say, and you must check also as to whether maybe the line that is moving from the placenta to the fetus is the umbilical vein or the umbilical artery. Remember I said that is the umbilical vein. Now you are going to say the umbilical vein transport nutrients from the placenta to the fetus. Very simple. Whereas the... Let me deal with the umbilical vein first. Then the second point we are going to talk about oxygen. Remember, oxygen should be transported from the placenta to the fetus. Now, you are going to say, remember, blood with oxygen are called oxygenated blood. So you are going to say the umbilical vein transport deoxygenated blood from the placenta to the fetus. Now, let us talk about the waste that are going to be released by the fetus to the placenta now. Then you check the arrow that moves from the fetus to the placenta. You end up realizing that is the umbilical artery. Now, you are going to say the umbilical artery transport deoxygenated blood, that is D meaning minus, oral blood without oxygen or less oxygen, which is carbon dioxide. In other words, transport carbon dioxide from the fetus to the placenta. But we are going to say the umbilical artery transport deoxygenated blood from the fetus to the placenta, and it also transport the nitrogen waste from the fetus to the placenta. Very simple. But now, with regard to the placenta, because it's found between the mother and the fetus, remember I said one is the mother, then two is the placenta, and then three the fetus. You are going to say it attaches the fetus to the mother. That is the first point. Number two, you are going to tell us about the hormone it releases. It releases progesterone. And remember, normally it's produced after 3 months, because before 3 months, progesterone is released by the corpus luteum. Now, the other functions that we are supposed to know are the functions of the, or maybe moving on with regard to the function of placenta. The first one I said it attaches the fetus to the mother. Number two, it secretes progesterone. 3, 4, 5, and 6 are more or less the same as the function of the umbilical cord. The only thing that we need to do here is just to insert the word diffusion. So let us talk about gases first. You are going to say it allows for diffusion of carbon dioxide, obviously from the fetus to the mother. Then that is the first part. Now you are going to talk about another gas now. If it allows diffusion of oxygen from the fetus to the mother, then it allows for diffusion of carbon dioxide from the fetus to the mother. Then number the other function, it allows for diffusion of oxygen from the mother to the fetus. Very simple. And then with regard to nitrogenous waste and also nutrients, obviously you know that the fetus should receive nutrients. Very simple. Now you are going to say it allows for diffusion of dissolved food or nutrients from the mother to the fetus. But it allows for diffusion of nitrogenous waste from the fetus to the mother. As simple as that. Now, the other one, examiner may request you to give the function of the amniotic fluid. Then, with amniotic fluid, it acts as shock absorber. In other words, it prevents the fetus against mechanical injury. And it also allows for free fetal movement for growth and the development. And then, the other one, it keeps the fetus within a small temperature range. It keeps the fetus within a small temperature range. And then the other one, it prevents the embryo against dehydration. Remember, dehydration, we're talking about drying out. Why? Because it's a fluid. Obviously, you don't have to cram. It prevents the embryo against dehydration. That is drying out. And then the next lesson, before I round up everything, I must tell you about the next lesson. It's going to be on Saturday from 14 hour to 15 hour. During that period, I'll be dealing with menstrual cycle. In fact, I'm going to discuss this chapter and also couple it with plant response to or maybe reproduction invertebrates. But I'm going to guide you about the menstrual cycle. Number two, the ovarian cycle and uterine cycle. From there, also deal with different questions based on the reproduction. For now, good night, up until we meet on Saturday from 14 hour to 15 hour. Good night.
This grade 12 lesson was proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more, providing quality education.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.